it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Loud and Local continues on The Rock with Kevin Deers, 99.9 KISW.
Hey, what's going on? It's Kevin Deers, Loud and Local Stay Home Sessions, or Loud and Local Podcast. Wanted to let everyone know that there were a couple issues with the audio this week. For some reason, my voice got really quiet during this interview, so I tried to make it sound as normal as possible. There are a couple times where my voice is kind of low. I tried to tweak it, and hopefully it is bearable to listen to. This is a really good interview with Will Andrews, an incredibly talented artist. He plays drums in The Walking Papers, but we're talking about 10 Miles Wide this week, a band that is going to be playing a show at Easy Street Records on Saturday, September 24th. It is a free show at Easy Street Records. West Seattle Bridge will be open. At the end of the interview, we play a brand new song by his band, 10 Miles Wide. So let's get into the interview. Thank you so much for tuning in every week to Loud and Local, Sundays 8 to 10 p.m., and checking out the Loud and Local podcast every week here, the Odyssey app, or anywhere you get podcasts. Here's my interview with Will Andrews from 10 Miles Wide. Hey, what's going on? We're talking right now with Will Andrews from a band called 10 Miles Wide. I saw him just about a week ago for Painting the Grass with his other band Walking Papers, and we were talking about, you know, let's get this going, let's talk, because it's been a while since I had 10 Miles Wide on the show. Obviously in the past it's been in person. Things have changed a bit in the past couple of years. I'm trying to move toward getting that going, but we'll see. Will, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Kevin?
Doing good, man. We both went to WWE SmackDown over the weekend.
Yes, we did.
It was a good show. You're a fellow wrestling nerd.
You know, I took a long break from wrestling, and for some reason, a few years ago, it's just like I caught the bug. Maybe 5 years ago, I caught the bug.
Yeah.
And started watching it, started kind of getting back into the old like 80s and 90s WWF stuff. And then
totally
watched the YouTube shows, and you know, like there's like OSW Review and Botchamania. And it's like, there's this guy I worked with at American Music. His name is Tyler. He was the guitar repair tech. And he's like, you got to start watching wrestling because you're the only one here that gets it. So you can't leave me out to dry. I was like, okay, I'll start watching it. So I did. And I'm like, okay. Yep. All right. I get it again. You know, yeah. And I just totally like dove back into it. And luckily my girlfriend Tara like grew up with wrestling too. And she's That's super awesome. Into it. So I always got someone to go to the shows with, which is super fun. And we'll go check out indie shows. And
yeah.
We'll check out the big shows. And we've flown to like Royal Rumble before, and we're probably going to see more in the future and stuff. So
that's so dope. That's so dope. So you're a big guy. You're a big guy. You're tall. You're strong. You got the long hair. You got the goatee. I could totally see you being a wrestler if you were to magically be transported into WWE and you had to pick a band to write you a custom theme song. What band would you choose?
I've totally thought about this so many times. And now that I'm on the spot, I can't think of it. Let's see. If I was to pick something, it would probably be something like Killing Joke. Something that's got some like raw, like aggression, but like really cool melody and harmony to it.
Totally. Yeah.
There's a couple of songs I could see that would be really, really awesome. Speaking of that, somehow like last year during October, I was like, oh, I remember that band Typo Negative from when I was growing up.
Yes.
It's like, oh, it's kind of Halloween-y. And I kind of feel like listening to them for the first time in like 30 years. So I did.
Yeah.
And I got way into their album, October Rust. And it turns out I did some kind of research on Typo Negative. Turns out they did a theme song for Kane that was
they never used it. Yeah.
Yeah, you've
what
heard
the hell?
It.
Yeah, yeah, it's so good.
So good. It, I mean, the Kane theme song is amazing. Good. It's one of the best of all time, in my opinion. But the Typo, if they were to switch over to that at some point, that it was just like chill inducing. It's so good. So that would be another band that would be perfect if I was to be a if I was to be a wrestler and have a band write me a theme song.
Well, I mean, you got the red hair. You could be Undertaker's younger brother.
I could be the second Undertaker or the third Undertaker.
There you go.
Where they had that feud where they had the fake Taker.
Yep.
Actually, if I was to be an indie wrestler, I thought of a weird persona to be called the Under Raker. And it would be like some like sort of like a park attendant that would clean up and rake leaves and stuff like that. And I'd be like, I don't know, I'd have some sort of like catchphrase like raking leaves or something stupid like that.
That'd be cool.
I don't
know. That'd be cool.
Yeah, so Under Raker. Yeah, it could still be a thing. I'd come out with like instead of a hearse, it'd be like a wheelbarrow. And like instead of an urn, it would be like a pitchfork. I don't know. Something like that.
I love it. It's good to talk wrestling. It's good to catch up. But the reason we're talking today is because you guys just played a record or you guys just played a show. Sorry, not a record release show. You guys just played a show at the Tractor Tavern this past weekend. And you're going to be playing a show. The West Seattle Bridge will be open for this one. So easily get yourself over to West Seattle for a free show at an iconic Northwest record store. Easy Street Records, one of the last remaining record stores here in the city. In West Seattle, it's an in-store performance Saturday, September 24th at 6 p.m. 10 miles wide. So how'd you guys get this going, man? It's cool. It's cool to have a local band doing an in-store album. Yeah. Sorry, not an in-store performance at a local record store. How'd you guys get it going?
There's a little bit of a backstory to it. So our friend Zanna tried to get us into Easy Street for like the last 10 years. She's been kind of, you know, lobbying for us or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some people over there that bought some CDs at some point. I remember dropping a bunch of CDs off and then like, I don't know whether they went missing or if they sold. I never followed up. I just like, oh, whatever. It's like five CDs.
Sure.
And I wrote them and I never heard back, And there's this guy named Patrick Gurley is his name. Mm-hmm. And he like totally like, insisted that we play there, and he wrote them like relentlessly, I guess, over the last couple of months and got them to listen to our stuff. So I think it's probably some sort of like 1-2 punch combo between a few people kind of really pushing for us to get in there.
Shout out to Patrick Gurley, man. Wow. Yeah,
big thanks to Patrick. Cause I've been trying for years. It's like,
yeah,
if you want to play Easy Street Records, that means you're doing something right. Or if you get, I don't know. I just like every time I see a local band there, it's like, sweet. I wish I could do that. Cool. I wish I was, you know, whatever, you know, it's like one of those things. And then like, lo and behold, we got enough people barking up the right tree and we get an opportunity, and we kind of had to hold back on announcing it just cause we had the tractor show and we didn't want to take steam away from that.
Sure.
But I think that 2 weeks of promo for something like this and for a free show when the bridge is open and we got a whole like West Seattle crew out there that hasn't seen us in a while. And they like what we do. And I'm pretty sure they're going to be totally cool driving a little bit down the street to see us as opposed to going over a bridge dealing with traffic. And, you know, usually I don't know if they do it different these days. I haven't seen one in a few years because of COVID, but they usually have the whole side of the building open and there's good airflow and you can watch on the street and all that stuff. So for anyone that might still be worried about COVID, it might be a good kind of outdoor / partially indoor sort of thing to check out too. So.
That's badass, man. Well, congratulations on getting that gig.
Thanks.
And shout out to Patrick. Shout out to the forces that have convened to get you this gig. And I bet they're gonna want you back after they see how killer of a show you guys put on.
Hope so.
The tractor, though. Tell me a little bit about this. I was unable to go this past Saturday. How was it? This was the first 10 miles wide performance in quite a while. Is that right?
We've done a few. Done a few, but that was probably the largest show we've done. Although I just venue, we played, well, I mean, we played a couple others. I mean, during COVID, we actually got to play the Neptune Theater for the first time for one of the Lane's Daily Benefits. So it was like no shows. Boom. There's like 600 people. It's like,
right.
Okay. This is, I was like nervy. It was super weird. Like it was just going, you know, it was probably, what was that, 2021 at some point. So it was like a couple good couple years there without shows. And then that was the first one back. And it was like, whew, okay, this is intense.
Right.
We've done the High Dive. We've done the Belltown Yacht Club.
Yeah.
But the Tractor was, I don't even know if I should say this, but it was going to be our album release show originally.
Yeah.
And kind of what happened was, is that we gave the tracks to John because he wanted to tweak a couple of vocals in his basement studio.
Yeah.
And he ended up rewriting like the whole album. These songs that we're working on right now for our upcoming album are kind of old and the kind of like past lyrics from the past. And like, John's such a good singer. You want him to believe what he's saying. Cause it's going to, the whole album's going to just like benefit from that. So he spent a ton of time like redoing everything and not just redoing it, but like being kind of a perfectionist about it.
Sure.
So, I mean, if the whole, why rush the thing if we don't have to, we have no deadlines or anything like that. I know people have been waiting for 6 years for this thing to come out, but we're almost there. You know, it's just, we have most of the tracks done. So anyway, we didn't get to have the Tractor Show be our album release party, but we ended up adding a band called Shame Banger onto the bill to kind of, to round it out a little bit, to provide some, a little bit more variety. And just, you know, Rowan Chamberlain, the singer, has been a friend for years, and they were totally awesome. And they did a great job.
And this was Action S's second to last show ever.
Yeah, it was Shame Banger, Astor House, who was just band of the week, and they did great. They always do great.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Their songs are really well crafted. And then Action S, it was kind of bittersweet just because they're so good. They're so good, and they're so energetic. They all have like great personalities, and just their music is so intense and fun and quirky and musical. There's lots of, you know, cool technical things that they do in there too, you know.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate that band. I'm gonna miss that band, but I'm looking forward to see what happens with all of them down the road in their individual projects or whatever they end up doing. I don't know. I haven't really heard yet, but yeah, we had a fun show, and you know, we didn't have a lot of rehearsal time because John was on vacation prior to the show, and Shane was on vacation prior to John going on vacation. So we took a little bit of liberty and jammed out a couple of things and tweaked one old song that we're kind of a little bit bored with to make it fresh again.
Yeah.
We might keep that version in the set for the next show. We'll see. We'll see how much time we have and how it goes.
So, you know, I'm just throwing this question out there, and if it hasn't changed, you know, let me know. But you know, we just went through, you know, a couple of crazy years, you know, I'm not a musician myself, so I can only speak to, you know, from a show going experience, from being a supporter of the scene. And I'm curious, from a musician's perspective, has the music scene in the Northwest changed since things have come back open?
Well, I've noticed some pros and cons with shows. With any venue you talk to, or most bands that you talk to, attendance is definitely down, you know, probably by about, you know, 25 to 50% per show. It seems, maybe that's just my shows. I hope not, but I kind of feel like the national shows are picking up again. Things like movies are picking up again. So things that have big promotion and money behind them and are big spectacles seemed, and a little bit more open space too. That's another thing, right? You go to your Climate Pledge and you got lots of room around you, despite there being a lot of people and stuff, but at a local show it can get really kind of cramped and hot and tight, especially in the summer and stuff. So it seems like attendance is down, by a good clip, but there's something about the people that are showing up. They're showing up more often and they're in really good spirits. And it seems like the musicians are really good spirits to like see people again and like, you know, finally have their platform back. And it's just, I think it's doing a lot of good for a lot of people, musicians especially, you know, just because it's like without an outlet, what can you do? You can record, but then without being able to share those songs, you know, and display your art in some form, it almost feels like, I don't know how to describe that. It's like you're trying to create art in a vacuum or something like that without that energy exchange. So yeah, it's really great. And I'm super grateful of the fans and like the fans that have been with the bands that I'm in through this period. I'm like, I'm just so appreciative. And I'm really mm-hmm. trying to get to know people better, despite, you know, kind of running around like a, you know, chicken with its head cut off at the show, trying to like warm up and
yeah.
set up and prepare mentally and, you know, sometimes set up the merch or whatever, depends on the band, you know, but I'm trying to go the extra mile for the people that are, that have been consistently going the extra mile for, you know, the artistic endeavors that I'm involved in. It's just, it feels great, you know?
So it might be a little bit smaller, but it's the quality over the quantity possibly.
Kind of? I mean, the quantity is pretty nice too. When you have
okay.
that,
and okay.
when you have a wonderful radio station, like KSW backing shows, you know,
cheap really pop helps. Mick Foley style.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, really appreciative of KSW and what you do, Kevin. And yeah. I know that there were extra people at the show that would not have gone because of the promo that KSW did that week, that met some awesome. New people, got to know their names and stuff like that, and just thank them. And, you know, they ended up buying merch, and it's just great. You know what I mean? So that extra promo really, really helps us. And
oh, that's cool.
It's just awesome to see it pan out, you know? So
I love hearing that. That's really cool. That's cool. Yeah,
it matters. It really does matter. And like I've said a couple times before, KSW is the only station that's ever given 10 miles wide love, you know, as far as local stations are concerned. That's mm-hmm. that's the one, you know. So I appreciate that too.
You know, I mentioned at the top of the interview that I saw you play with Walking Papers just a couple weeks back at Pain in the Grass. John is in a band called Mean Genius mm-hmm. with Tony from formerly of Windowpane. And a couple of the guys from Windowpane. So you guys yep. are, you know, you guys are busy outside of 10 miles wide, but this is a band that has kind of been the home base for you guys for the past, you know, decade plus. You know, you guys have been going formerly under the name The Mothership. Mm-hmm. And we'll be getting into re-release talk here in just
sure.
a few. But, you know, what, how do you guys balance all of that, you know, with, you know, outside projects, outside day job, probably, I'm assuming. But then yeah. always consistently coming back to 10 miles wide enough to, you know, spend a ton of time on a new record. How do you guys kind of balance?
For myself, I can only speak for myself, but there's just, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot. And I want to do a lot and I want to get myself out there and help out all the projects. And, you know, I was actually drumming for the only Mean Genius shows that happened. I actually played drums at,
oh, wow. which,
like, we did one at the Funhouse with this band called Moon Fever that has Tristan Broad as their vocalist. Mm-hmm. And they were awesome. And Tristan's an awesome singer. And we did the first Mean Genius show at the Crocodile, which was mm-hmm. cool. And, I got to do their record, which is also really cool. So whenever that, not their single, but whenever the record comes out, that'll be yeah. me on there, which is cool. But yeah, it's just this balance of, there's really not a balance. It's like either too much or slightly less too much. It's like there's not really a lot of downtime, you know, and like just today is like my only day off that I have. And it wasn't a day off. I was working on 10 miles wide stuff all day, you know, and I had a couple of errands to run and stuff, but, Walking Papers, we typically do a jam or two a week until we're playing a show. Then we ramp up. Same with 10 miles. You know, lately it's been a lot of writing for John. And so we've done less rehearsals, but whenever we have a show, we try to at least get two to four rehearsals in, which is not as much as it's not ideal, but that's sometimes all we can squeeze in there. And then Mean Genius will be one or two a week when there's a show happening. And I'm still kind of the fill in drummer. I'm not officially in that band, but I'm kind of helping them out and stuff like that. And then I'll do flyouts to play with Bexley in LA, or last year we did Austin City Limits Fest, and that they're like one of my favorite bands to play with. They're super fun and just good people. And I love playing their tunes and we just have a good time together and they take care of me really well.
And
so
you teach drum lessons, right? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I work at West Coast Drum Shop in Bellevue, which is this killer standalone drum shop. It's the only standalone drum shop in the Pacific Northwest, aside from Rainier Drum Shop in Spokane. But we do everything. We have a full teaching studio. We do electronic, acoustic. We got all the brands, full roster of teachers, tons of students, all kinds of stuff. So it's, and I'm not just selling there too. I'm teaching, selling, I'm doing social media. I'm doing lots of behind the scenes stuff. They got me pretty busy over there too, which is a good day gig. I gotta say, it's super fun. It's actually a really creative like endeavor for me too, 'cause they give me so much freedom over the things that I can do and create and you know, all that stuff. So it actually is a pretty satisfying job, to be completely frank. So that's pretty cool too.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know, who do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
Pound has done a couple things, workshops.
Yeah, we had Pound in there twice. I don't know if that was Ryan's idea or my idea or something, but we came together, and it's like, yeah. I think Chase Culp, the owner of West Coast Drum Shop, was like, you know, should we get some local bands in here? Who around here could do a really good job? And I'm like, I see Pound and I see their content and I see their, you know, their shows and I see their touring and I see, like, you know, I called up Ryan, like, would you guys want to do like a clinic? You know, that sounds kind of weird, but you can perform. He's like, we've always wanted to do that. You know what I mean? Like, he was super stoked on it, and they were the perfect band because they came in, they set up, they had like their music, their sheet music on a tablature on a video screen. And they were talking about all the complex, you know, polyrhythms and stuff that they do. And it was just amazing to A, see them perform in such a cool setting, such a different setting. And then to like talk about the inner workings of their music. And then they did the second clinic was like how to run a band, you know, and like get your Excel spreadsheets in order with your merch and learn how to book a tour and have, you know, make sure you have your, you know, your work permits all squared away for different country. It's just like, it was awesome to see that too. And they played again. It was just, they're great. And I think a lot of people got a lot out of those clinics, you know, if technically, with music or just, you know, business, you know, which was really, really awesome. So love those guys. They're so cool.
Shout out to them. Right on.
Yeah. Shout out to Pound.
We're talking a little bit about how this new album, you said, is kind of old. Like, what do you mean by that? Like, were these songs written before the pandemic? Were these songs that you guys have had, you know, kind of been working on for quite a while now? How old exactly are they?
Yeah, well, The Gross came out in 2016. Some of those songs on the Gross were kind of new. Some of those songs on The Gross were from John's old band called Future Fossils that he wrote a long time ago, kind of like 2006, 2008, that kind of mid-2000s era. Okay. Some of the songs on the new 10 Miles upcoming record are that old. Wow. Some of them we wrote with Ryan Thorns, our old bass player. Mm-hmm. I think even before Jake joined the band, which was prior to The Gross coming out, we were working on some of those skeletons of the songs. And then one or two of the songs, I'm not sure what's going to end up on the record, but one of those songs we wrote with before Jake was in 10 Miles Wide. We wrote as a trio, me, John, and Jake. So there's that.
Wow.
And then a bunch of the songs were kind of, the rest of the songs were kind of since 2016. Okay. And when I was on tour with Walking Papers, there was one last song where they were like pissed at me for like leaving constantly and going on tour with another band, which I totally get. But they wrote a song called Onions when I was on tour, and Jake played drums on the demo. So that's kind of a fun little tidbit. So when I came back, I learned the drum part and kind of did my thing with it or whatever. And that's going to be the next single we're going to release. I don't know when that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen before the Easy Street show on the 24th of September, but that'll be the first kind of like single we actually put some serious promo into, because it's kind of one of our popular tunes.
Yeah.
That one's, we played that one at the last two shows that we played too. So we're finally putting it into the live rotation.
That's awesome, man.
That feels good. So yeah, all the songs are pretty old. I will say that John has had this like year of creative output, artistic output, where he's he's probably written 50 something songs on his own outside of 10 Miles Wide. And I've heard a good chunk of them. And it's honestly like this 10 Miles Wide album that's going to come out soon is going to be cool. But the songs that he has in the hopper that are ready to start getting worked on, I mean, those are the best songs he's ever written, in my opinion.
Wow.
Like just this entire life of songwriting has culminated to this point. It's just, they're really special. And, you know, with all the luck in the world, we'll be able to start chipping away at those kind of soonish after we release this upcoming record. We really need, like, you know, Shane's been in the band, our new bass player. He's not new anymore. He's been in the band since 2018. We did our first show with him at the Clockout Lounge back then. And, you know, like we've barely gotten any time to write with him in the band. It's just been like, play these shows, work on the old songs, record the songs, play another show. And it's like, we haven't spent time like nurturing that, like that musical sex you have with new bandmates. And he's so awesome, by the way. Like he's just like one of the most solid musicians, consistent, yeah. Even keel, not dramatic.
Seems like it. Yeah.
Good dude, right? Great player, just gets out of being a band, just solid, reliable, good communicator. He's just like, just ticks all the boxes. So to have someone like that in your band, you know, it's just great. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, you know, this is, I gotta say, it's kind of a classic musician move, dude. You're stoked about the new album, but you can't wait till the next ones. You're like, this new album's cool, but the next, man.
Yeah, I know.
You're already tired of the new album.
Yes. Well, songs are 6 years old. Exactly. It's hard not to be, you know, but no one else has heard them, or we've been playing a lot of them live actually for years. But
well, what can we expect from the what can we expect from the album, man? Well, give us a little tease.
I will tell you that at first it was going to be a collection of songs like most albums, and The Gross was done really quickly. It was kind of like, okay, we got these songs, we think they're good enough to record. Let's go in them. Let's record them as cheap as possible, and we'll have Derek Morey mix them because his mixing is amazing. So we got free recordings we did at the Art Institute. And then we had Derek mix those. And then we did three tunes with Jack and Dino, and he did all of the stuff, which turned out great. So we got three Jack tunes and a bunch of Derek tunes. This current album, there's still some budgetary constraints, but we were able to record drums at my buddy Pat Foy's studio. I call it the Secret Studio. It's in Mill Creek, and no one really knows about it aside from the people that kind of jam there and kind of record there. But it's one of my favorite places in all of Seattle to record drums. It's got an amazing room sound. Pat's an awesome engineer. He's got great mics. He knows what he's doing. And we recorded drums for this, I want to say in 2018 or 2019, before we had all of his good gear. So he's only gotten better as the years have gone on.
Nice.
But what's happened is that we had all the basic tracks done. We gave them all to John. John has created this, I don't like this crazy layered, like textural component to this record that, and he's doing a lot of like connecting the songs together with like segues and interludes and things like that, to where it's turning out to be way more epic than I ever thought it was. There's some stories on the songs that are kind of stories on the record.
Sure.
Sound effects, weird instruments that we've never put on, not weird instruments, but weird instruments that we've never put on recordings before, like different stringed instruments and cymbals and ukuleles that are played like a mandolin and like weird stuff. So
nice.
But if they're used to enhance the record and not, you know, to kind of add atmosphere and texture, you know. So yeah. So it's going to be pretty epic, I think. And there's going to be, and we're kind of a weird band where we're going to have like a slow bluesy jam in our set. Then we'll have a punk tune in our set, and then we'll have prog rock in our set, and we'll have jam outs, and then we'll have pop songs. So it, like, we kind of do a little bit of everything. It's just because I think we all like bands that have a lot of variety in them. And, you know, I think a lot of my favorite bands always kind of like, you know, push the envelope in that regard and didn't just stick to one exact, you know, sound, you know. So
are you able to tell us the name
of the album? Should I probably should. Well, the name that we've had in the back of our minds forever has been Hair of the Werewolf. So you think Hair of the Dog, you know, Hair of the Werewolf. Pretty big step up from a dog. So there's some pretty crazy topics on this, lyrical topics on this record for sure. Some pretty intense stuff, but you know, just stuff that either band members have been through or kind of purging past demons and things like that. You know, it's kind of a lot of what this record is about.
Terror of the Werewolf.
So
looking forward to it.
Me too. Can't wait to hear it.
Yes. So last year you released something that has been 10 years in the making. It was the 10-year anniversary of the album 10 Miles Wide by the band The Mothership.
The previous yep.
incarnation of the band. So tell me a little bit about what brought you guys to deciding to re-release it on vinyl, and how did it feel to like hold that in your hand?
Yeah. So Paul Fraser expressed interest in wanting a record of a band that he was in, right? And that was the last full band that was in. He's written tunes and stuff for like Sony Records and stuff like that since he's been in 10 Miles Wide. He's a great songwriter. But he and his buddy Todd were experimenting with some sort of like vinyl pressing machine they acquired or came across or something like that. So they took the CD and put it on a record and played it on a turntable and took a little like, you know, cell phone video. And they're like, dude, check this out. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Interesting. And you got a little interesting little record done. And I'm thinking to myself, I hated the original master from that first album we did. I thought it was botched. It was a weird botched job. It never sounded right. And they're like, well, I want to make some records. I'm like, well, it's really expensive, but I think we might be able to make this work if we start selling them and pushing them at the 10 Miles Wide shows. And I kind of took the financial hit on that to take the plunge to do it. But what we did is we kind of went back and we had Paul Feig remixed one of the songs as a bonus track. So we took our, you know, kind of biggest hit that was never a hit from the record called Flower. We gave that one to Paul Feig, who's done work with like Alice in Chains and stuff like that. And awesome, awesome bands.
Yeah.
And he remixed the song really well. We gave a song called Bite the Lion to Derek Morey, who was involved in our second record called Bright Side of Dim and the 10 Miles Wide Gross record. Mm-hmm. Derek did a great remix of Bite the Lion. And then we got all the Houdini's Tree, David Green mixes in 24-bit. We sent them to a UK mastering engineer. His name's Streaky. Okay. And he did an incredible job of remastering the record. It sounds so good. And it just like when I listen to his master, I picture myself in the basement we recorded it in Magnolia. You know what I mean? Like I'm like right back there. It's like you can hear the cardboard stairwell echo chamber that David Green built, like, you know, like in his basement. You know what I mean? Like stairway, put cardboard alongside of it and put mics in it. And that's what created the drum sound on that record. You know what I mean? So it was like, I actually heard a lot more of that, and things got revealed because of this great mastering job. And then we kept the files in the high bit rate or whatever and sent them to what's the printing press?
Pirate?
No, it was Solid Merch.
Okay.
Solid Merch. And they get the vinyls made in Czech Republic, which is where a lot of vinyls are made these days. Got a rush job on it so we could get them in time for something. I don't remember what. We needed to have a deadline or something. I can't remember why. And we did like, yeah, you choose the colors, Czech Republic, you know, whatever materials and colors you have, use all that. And they turned out great. And there's like green ones and pink ones and flesh colored ones and swirly ones and all that stuff. Luckily I did the template all correct because there was going to be no proof before we decided to hit the green light.
Yeah.
But yeah, they turned out awesome. 180 gram vinyl, great remaster.
So cool.
Took them from the high bit rate files and put them on analog, and they play great. They sound great. They look great. I got to fit all the artwork on two panels.
Yeah.
As opposed to like a 10 page CD booklet. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. I think that there were a lot of people. Well, we sold a bunch of them so far, but we've been selling them at shows. They've kind of been a slow trickle. I think this Easy Street show has the potential to sell a lot more considering it's a record store.
Yeah.
And we can maybe leave some for consignment and stuff like that. And maybe people will kind of filter back in who live nearby and hear us playing like us or walking down the street or something like that. So let's just hope it's not raining that day. Let's hope it's sunny.
Dude, that's so cool, man. And you know, we got CDs. I obviously collect CDs, but I also collect vinyl. And there's something about having that, you know, tangible thing, you know, with the big artwork. And you know, that was your hard work putting it into that. And then, your hard work putting back into it to get that rush job and to have it all work out. Synchronicity, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I can grab one real quick if you want to.
Let's take a look. Yeah.
Hang tight. All right. So.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's front and back.
That's awesome.
New font on there. I don't have to go and show the artwork or anything, but it turned out awesome. But yeah, I like collecting vinyl too. I don't even have a record player, and you can tell by this Meshuggah immutable vinyl.
Yes.
The cellophane's still on there because I have no way of playing it, and it's a limited release. So who knows? Maybe I'll just keep it in there, and maybe it'll accrue some sort of value over time or something like that. But I got a bunch more up there.
Yeah.
It's nice to collect it, you know?
Exactly. Oh, man. So if you want to pick up some more, see what I'm doing here. If you want to pick up some more records, you can do so on the 24th when you go see this band, 10 Miles Wide. You can pick up the record we just spoke of. You can pick up some of their CDs. You can pick up a t-shirt, or you can go record shopping while you listen to them. Again, that's at West Seattle, Easy Street Records location, in-store performance, Saturday, September 24th at 6 p.m. The West Seattle Bridge will be open. So definitely make your way over there. Beyond that, what do you guys have any future plans past that? Just the record, record coming out and.
Yep. Record coming out early. Hopefully early next year is kind of what we're thinking.
Awesome.
Before that we have a couple shows. We have an October 21st. Let me check the date.
Don't worry.
At the Substation. And that's with, we haven't announced it yet. Yeah, it should be the 21st. I could be wrong on that. I think it's the 21st. It's with a band called Sea Peoples, who Jake Carden knows, our guitar player. And they tour the country every year and stuff like awesome. That. And they like to hook up with us when they're in town. And I believe the Kathy Moore Trio is going to be on that show. And I've never played a show with one of my bands with Kathy Moore, though both of us were on the same tune on a Led Zeppelin. It was the John Bonham tribute night at the Crocodile years back or whatever. We got to do that with Sean Smith, but I haven't actually gotten to play a show with Kathy since then. She's so awesome. So that's exciting. And then we have a Back to the Locals Fest in Everett, Washington on November 11th. And we'll be, I think, one of the featured bands on one of the nights. Well, obviously, the 11th, but there's, I think, two nights, I want to say. It's at Tony V's. So we'll be doing that. And then I think what we're trying to do is take a show break so we can like finish the record and strategize the next release. That's kind of the plan. And jam and write new songs.
Well, let's chat once the album's about to come out and we'll play some more songs from it. But right now we're actually just going to play the first single from the record called Minion. Is there anything you want to say about this song?
That's an old song. It's one of those old songs that John wrote well over 10 years ago, probably 15 years ago. And I used to see his old band play it. And we didn't put it on any Mothership Records or the first 10 Miles Wide record. And just, we thought that it was kind of fitting the vibe of this current record that we have. And we did our thing to it, of course, you know, and kind of, you know, yeah, we changed it a little bit. We altered it, but the original song is still intact. The lyrics are all new. A lot of the melodies are new. Jake adds great harmonies in his guitar parts. And, you know, Shane's got a great attitude on the bass and all that stuff. So it's an old song, but it's got new life breathed into it. And it's got a pretty powerful story behind the lyrics. So, yeah. And it's a little bit of a longer song. It's about 6 minutes long and it changes a couple times, and yeah, so it's a little bit of an adventure.
Right on, man. Well, we're gonna get into it again. Harrow the Werewolf, he dropped that. That's a Loud and Local exclusive, my friend.
I think it is.
Yes, you can go see them play songs that you might recognize and maybe some new ones. Saturday, September 24th at 6 p.m. The West Seattle Bridge will be open to go to Easy Street to see 10 Miles Wide. Will, it's always a pleasure, man. Let's jump into the song. This is Minions. Sorry, this is Minion, not the movie Minions.
Yeah.
This is Minion by 10 Miles Wide. It's Loud and Local.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow, it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.